Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no country. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. I thought John Lennon's Imagine would be a fitting way to kick off this New Year's edition of the New American Dream Radio Show. We have a clean slate, a new day, a fresh start. Whatever tired cliche we choose isn't so tired just yet, because it's the first day of a new year. Welcome to 2015. Let's make it a year of peace among nations, peace between races, peace with those around us. Imagination is the key to empowerment. Let us imagine a better world and then make it happen. Remember to ask questions. Remember to challenge lies. Remember to forgive faults. That's what our New American Dream is all about. I'd like to thank Revolution Radio at freedomslip.com for hosting our show. Did you know they just turned four? That's right. This is their fourth anniversary, fourth birthday, well, whatever you want to call it. You know, they're listener supported, so it'd be great if you were to head over to freedomslip.com and make a donation to buy something. Two studio streams broadcasting almost all the time, and I know they'd welcome your support. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show, and I am proud now introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palaszczuk, an American writer.
Happy New Year, Chuck. Tonight we welcome special guests Sherwood Ross, Mickey Z, Ole Damegard, and Phil Ferruccio. And so tonight we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Port Orange, Coral Gables, somewhere in Spain, Queens, Astoria, New York City, and wherever you are. Isn't it also interesting that Sony Hack, Anthrax Report Release, Torture Documents, Torture Queen's Address Release, which is 1437 Brookhaven Drive, McLean, Virginia, 1 Alfredo Bukowski. CIA engineered oil glut. Were two NYC cops really killed? What exactly is happening in the Big Lebowski? It's impossible to keep up, and more every day, the intrigue, psychological operations, deception, the maneuvering, shell games that go on. Maybe they always were, probably, and no doubt enhanced by technology, but it's different now. We have the Internet, and we have Kevin Barrett, Jim Fetzer, and James Tracy to help us to understand. It's kind of incredible, actually, to be able to be living now and taking this all in. And so I say, as a check waiter, setting down your Lincolnberry pancakes as you sit in a booth at Johnny's Restaurant on a sunny morning in Los Angeles to take in the set of The Big Lebowski, enjoy. Veterans Today by Jim Fetzer. Rejoice, for Christmas, no one died at Sandy Hook or Boston. Also by Jim Fetzer, to be found on the Veterans Today website. 9/11 update, more proof, no Boeing 757 hit the Pentagon. And False Flag Weekly News, each Thursday morning on No Life Radio. Don't miss it, it's un-American. And now, regarding the Minnesota Wolf Hunt, Advocates who have been fighting to stop the wolf hunt in Minnesota and Wisconsin got a big victory Friday. U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell in Washington, D.C. ordered the gray wolf hunt to stop in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. This is huge. This is the only way the wolf has survived as long as it did, said Dr. Maureen Hackett with Howling for Wolves. The Obama administration removed the gray wolf population from the endangered species list in the Western Great Lakes region in 2012. Google for photos, Minnesota wolf hunt. Anyone who doesn't feel like hunting wolf hunters after seeing that is not really human. Slaughterhouses, torture, war, bear hunting, wolf hunting. See anything beautiful and wild and just have to kill it. We are a virus with shoes, as Bill Hicks observed. But the wonder of the human species is that along with the wolf hunters, there are also people like Howling for Wolves President Dr. Maureen Hackett. So go to howlingforwolves.org. Tonight's show is sponsored in part by the good folks at Shop and Clump Indoor Porta Potties for the busy Christmas shopper. You're running around all day long, round and round, and flip on fine stuff to keep your favorite Americans happy. But sooner or later, you're going to have to need a pit stop. Why not Shop and Clump? Shop and Clump. Take some time out to sit in your little world, inches from the hurried masses around you, brushing against the wall while you hold on tight. You hear their conversations, who's a bitch and who shot what. While you search in the dark for the paper roll, you hold on to both walls, wondering if some teenage swarm might decide to tip you over. You reach out your foot to touch all your expensive, hard-won packages to make sure your whole day, your whole life was not wasted. You smile. It's all good. And then you hear the satisfying plop in the communal view. You are ready to continue, to push on, to persevere in your pursuit of the American dream. You emerge refreshed and victorious to join your fellow Americans, some standing in line glaring at you, some rushing past, brandishing razor-sharp elbows, and you smile for a moment. You pause to adjust those heavy bags cutting into your arms, and you nod knowingly, now realizing for perhaps the first time with such clarity why we killed those millions of Indians and those millions of Iraqi children and all those poor people in Afghanistan. You step down as a lady from the throne, as the next person takes your hand to allow you to set your blistered foot once again on to the mall tile floor. You gracefully bend your leg to pull the paper from your shoe, and you smile at the waiting line as a movie star to her adoring fans. And you realize Christmas is over. Everyone is gone. The mall is empty, but still you smile. You are an American. That was a really fulfilling plot. A nice getaway, a gift to yourself. You deserved it. Satisfying, cathartic, cleansing. You put your hand aside your ear. Aren't you hearing sleigh bells receding in the distance? No. You hear the echoing footsteps of the police and the actors getting in place for the next terror hoax. Shop and plot. It's the American way to go. Look next year for the handy blue and yellow plastic huts in the middle of the mall. And now this public service announcement. Got your camo on? We in America are under fire. Wear your camo, kitchen camo, lawn camo, office camo, gym camo, school camo, car camo, and bedtime camo. You can't expect anyone to feel sorry for you later if you're not wearing your camo.
And now for another episode of Nick Cheney, The Shadow. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Epic Shadow knows. Sponsored by Benjamin Moore High Gloss Latex Wallpaper. Where does your shadow go when the lights are off? It has to go somewhere, dude. Your shadow is part of you. You two are virtually inseparable. Have been for quite some time. Susan Wooten, Tom Wong, Amy Bainey, Carl Worrell, Justin. Nick sits in a Maryland coffee shop, Cafe Iago, talking to other shadows about how sometimes they follow, sometimes they meet. It's a good gig on the whole. Nick has been there, though, that's for sure. He's tired. He's old. He's almost at the end, but it's not up to him, is it? Or is it? Nick Cheney is a part of Dick Cheney. Seeing so, so much. Way too much. After the shower, taking a dump, all that freaking denture cream, squiggly white mountains, the evil finger paintings in the mirror, the shadow of the man behind the 9/11 attack, all those men's horses, the murder of Paul Wellstone. Nick tells a joke to the table of shadows around him and then disappears behind his own coffee cup, lost in his own thoughts. The horror. The horror. Tune in next week for another episode of Nick Cheney, The Shadow. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows. And now another episode of The View from the Grassy Knoll. Sponsored tonight by Home Depot Riding Lawnmowers, Scott's Lawn Seed, and Wisconsin Foo Foo Mulch. His name is Jesse. Jesse Washington. He's nobody. He's standing atop the concrete block by the pergola where Abraham's Zapruder stood. He sees all the evidence, all the angles, all around him. He's nobody, and he's hungry. He stood there, over there, on the curb, as a young boy, watching the parade, the motorcade. He needs a place to stay for the night. His family's angry. He's an embarrassment. A grown man still watching the parade after all those years. There's nobody there. What are you looking at? He gets chased away. Comes right back, stands here, there. He can see the whole world from atop that 4-foot concrete block. Yes, he can see time, all time. He can hear everything, feel everything, everybody. It's too much. But he stands there anyway, seeing, hearing, feeling. He feels he owes it to somebody.
Our first guest of the night is Ole Downegard. Due to technical difficulties, we weren't able to start the show until 10 minutes after the hour. But, Chuck, I think we could just try and get as much of Ole in there as we can, if that's okay with you.
Okay, well, here we go.
Here we go.
Our very first guest of this brand new year is Ole Downegard, our regular columnist who's reporting to us from Spain. Happy New Year, Ole, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Chuck, and happy New Year to you, too. Let's try and make this the very best year ever. I think that's my intention. I know that many people find these times very trying and scary and challenging, but I think there are a lot of signs in the so-called darkness showing that this elite few that are trying to really push us down with all different type of methods are really getting, they're running out of options, I would say, and they're getting quite desperate. That's why we see this rise in the frequency of mass shootings and of so-called false flag operations and so on. I think that's a very clear sign showing that they're getting very desperate, and it's getting more and more sloppy. At the same time, this really, I think, is very encouraging because it shows that things are going to change. And some people ask me if this change is going to happen so that my children are going to be afraid. In my opinion, it's just down the road. It's going to go very, very fast once it gets moving, I think. After 30 years of doing deep research into many different major political assassinations and so-called terror acts and false flags, I've never seen this situation before, so I feel very optimistic. I was just going to give you a little update on the things I'm working on at the moment, because I know we've been speaking about some of the cases before, and one of the cases that I mentioned and that I've gone into great details in other interviews, sometimes I give like an hour interview just about this case, is the death of Whitney Houston, which I would very much suggest was a homicide. And I've recently been able to get hold of the autopsy report, and in that it's very clear that there was foul play involved. Officially, Whitney Houston died of accidental drowning due to the use of cocaine and atherosclerotic heart disease, or whatever that is called. But when you really look into the autopsy report, there's so many strange things there. And one of the things is that they said they found her face down in the bathtub. Face down. Who in their right mind would ever take a bath with a face down? There's also this very strange thing about them. She was declared dead at 5:46 in the afternoon in their hotel suite. But it wasn't until almost around midnight that the police came there and started doing their checkup of the whole site. And in the whole in the time between these, I mean, for about 8 hours, her naked body was left in the hotel room while they had some 800 guests from the whole music scene doing the pre-Grammy party in the very same building, just a few floors below her. And one of the other things that I'm really looking into at the moment is that once the police did come there after eight hours, one of the things they did was to check the temperature from everything from the water temperature and the bathtub to the air temperature in the living room. And on the check the temperature of the deceased's liver, which is one way of deciding the time for when the death occurred. And normally they use an equation or a formula to define that, and that is when you go for the Celsius. I'm not so sure about the body temperature in Fahrenheit, but in Celsius, it's 37.5 degrees that they take as an average temperature of a person being alive. And then they say that for each and every hour that goes after somebody has died, the body loses about 1.5 degrees per hour. And then that's the way of making a calculation of when death occurs. But if you check out what was going on was that her body temperature only lost less than 3 degrees in 8 hours. So it was 35.5, that's 2 degrees, only 2 degrees in 8 hours, which is very odd. And so you think, okay, that the only way that could occur was if the temperature in the environment around it would be high enough, because that is the body temperature should adjust to the environment around it. But in this case, the room temperature is 19 degrees, a lot less. So it does.
Unfortunately, we didn't get to hear all of Ale's
do not know what hell looks like from the top. Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are until I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time, join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now for another episode of Buried at Sea with Bill Cosby, Ray Romano, Ashton Kutcher, Jennifer Aniston, Matthew Perry, Steve Carroll, Ben Stiller, Chevy Chase, and Carol Burnett. In this episode of Buried at Sea, we see President Bill Cosby speaking to the nation late at night from a podium in the White House in very serious, somber tones to tell us that Lee Harvey Oswald, 51 years later, has been buried at sea. That famed Eugene Caesar, a rent-a-cop in the pantry that night in the Ambassador Hotel, has for some reason been suddenly found in Southern California by Navy puffer fishes, dragged through the peony bushes, through McDonald's, down to Ventura Highway, Route 66, Highway 41, Sesame Street, and buried at sea. That James Earl Ray has been exhumed and buried at sea. That the cities of Waco and Oklahoma City have on his orders during the night, after intense deliberation with Jennifer Aniston and Matthew Perry, been buried at sea. That next year's Boston Marathon will be buried at sea, along with the remains of the World Trade Center Towers, Sandy Hook School in Memphis, Tennessee. We now see Steve Carell, Chevy Chase, and Carol Burnett rushing up to President Bill Cosby from behind. They skid to a stop on the slick-shined wooden floor, giggling, hand the president a note and run away, sliding, giggling, falling down. The very serious president arches one eyebrow, opens the note, and says that he is very sad to tell the American people that the LAX shooter, the D.C. sniper, the movie theater terror guy, the Tucson terror guy, the four-foot terror people, the Pentagon shooter, the Times Square fizzler, and the underwear bomber have all, on the recommendations of Ben Stiller, who has been in constant contact throughout the night with Ashton Kutcher and Ray Romano, all buried at sea. Join us next week for another episode of Buried at Sea with guest appearances from Cher, William Shatner, Courtney Cox, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Ellen DeGeneres. And now for another round of Just Give Us 5 Minutes, the New American Dream commentary. Just Give Us 5 Minutes with Bill Hicks, Jim Fletcher, and George Carlin, Kevin Barrett, and Lenny Bruce, Gordon Duff, and Dick Gregory on primetime national TV, and this country would change forever for the better. Just 5 freaking minutes. Here goes. This is it, the 5-minute revolution. Ready? Begin. Video experts observed that the video showing the actual beheading of U.S. journalist James Foley was so professionally produced and well-scripted to the extent that portions of it appeared to be just being acted out. Two video experts were one in observing that portions of the purported video were giveaways, that the beheading video was intended primarily for propaganda purposes. One security expert who had credible experience of scrutinizing videos of beheading noted a very strange thing about Foley's video. In the seconds before the executioner jabbed the knife into Foley's neck, there was no single sign that he was terrified. My experience of these things is when the knife gets close to the knees buckle, and you become like a rag doll, whereas this guy seemed to sit upright. It could be that it was a play-acting thing. After the part where the executioner was shown cutting Foley's head, the video fades. The next part of the video already showed Foley's decapitated head while he was upturned back on his back. His hands were handcuffed, but his right ankle already had bruises, hinting that he had been kneeling on the ground longer than what was shown in the video. And most importantly, a different-looking knife lies on the ground next to Foley's corpse. Joe Fields of Breakthrough Productions, a recording studio in London, on the other hand, noted that the video was well-produced, as both Foley and the masked man appeared to be speaking following well-scripted lines. What was noticeable for Fields was the battery-powered microphone clipped to the front of Foley's robe. He said that the microphone looks like a professional one used in television studios, so as the audio can be recorded without the need of editing or sound dubbing. With all these elements present, it could be considered that the man masked in black, speaking with a British accent, was just acting out the part. On the heels of its recent successful campaign, modeled on the words of Henry David Thoreau, "If you see something, say something," the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has announced its next successful campaign. Every town gets a shooting. The dearth of any bona fide terrorist threat in the United States no doubt accounts for the rash of contrived attacks, including most recently Aurora, Colorado, Tucson, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Santa Barbara, Seattle, Las Vegas, which are being used to promote an aggressive anti-gun agenda. The 9/11 attacks were done by the U.S. government and Israel. There were no terrorists. There are no terrorists. Nobody guided Sandy Hook or Boston, and on and on and on. And so, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and President Barack Obama have set a goal patterned after JFK's goal of reaching the moon, that within 5 years, every town in America will have a shooting of its own and will be able to put up an old cannon or plaque and have a memorial day of the shooting and heroes and a bigger police building. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one which we intend to win, and the others too. Kennedy's speech used three strategies: a characterization of space as a beckoning frontier, an articulation of time that locates the endeavor within a historical moment of urgency and plausibility, and a final cumulative strategy that invites audience members to live up to their pioneering heritage by going to the moon. And then, of course, we fake going to the moon by using studios and props and Hollywood technique, which we did have, in place of technology to actually get to the moon, which we did not have and still do not have. And in that same fake, brave spirit and tradition of deceit and cowardice, Barack Obama, who nobody knows where he's from or that his first job out of college was with the CIA and his mother was in the CIA, is telling us that these shootings and terror events are real. He tells anyone who will listen that Al-Qaeda and Baath-Qaeda attacked us on September 11, 2001, because if we figure out the truth, his whole life is a joke and a shambles. And so he's pretty nervous and pretty motivated to keep especially this lie going, like a performer racing around the stage trying to keep all those plates spinning. But eventually, one crashes, and then they all crash. President Barack Obama, Nobel Peace Prize winner and big-time hope and change president and all that, and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security are using three strategies: bullcrap, bullcrap, and bullcrap, in order to scare the American public into believing that those bumps in the night, which are actually FBI teams installing listening devices, are Al-Qaeda and Baath-Qaeda. In his recent address at the West Wing Presidential Laboratory, while standing all alone in the marble edifice at the lone urinal with Secret Service agents standing dutifully outside, hands folded over their privates because they too have to pee, but they have to wait, President Barack Obama addressed himself and outlined the Al-Qaeda and Baath-Qaeda threat, setting as his goal that the United States people would each have a shooting in their hometowns, grow their local police forces to the size of their local Walmart staff, have ceremonial cannons and plaques and fake heroes and fake dead persons, and be so proud and scared to be Americans. He zipped up, walked proudly out of the presidential laboratory, past the Secret Service bathroom detail, trailing a 9-foot piece of presidential toilet paper with the face of George Washington pattern all the way to the big press conference in the Rose Garden. And, of course, everyone cheered. And now we look in on the PBS, BBC, NPR, WTF Thursday night special with Barbara Walters. George W. Bush, the later years, in repose, as it were. We find George W. Bush in his red velvet smoking pajamas in the library off the East Wing, in the family home in the Preston Hollow neighborhood in north central Dallas, Texas, that is. Swimming pools, war criminals. While the family is out enjoying the pool in the backyard filled with black gold oil, that is, thick, sludgy oil. And we find Barbara Walters following the old president as he wanders in his pajamas and red, white, and blue slippers at 2 o'clock in the afternoon across the street to his presidential library. He walks in, smiles, and nods to the people behind the counter, the unemployed people, the Iraq vets with no legs, to the big chair with the long horn rack in the middle of the big room next to the video rental carousel. He opens the presidential book of wisdom and just plain dumb, with his picture on the front, a photo of him at Booker Elementary, reading My Pet Goat upside down, along with all the other presidents up to now. He pages to his section, and he begins to read the quotes, as he often does, just starts reading out loud, thinking that people will stop what they are doing and sit on the floor and listen, but they never do. They seem to not even see him. The unemployed people and the old ladies behind the desk and the Iraq veterans with no legs just wheel and walk past him while he talks like he's not even there. They almost seem to walk right to him as if a ghost. There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you, fool me, you can't get fooled again. He looks up with a smile. Barbara Walters is not smiling. She's looking down, making notes. So he looks down again to continue reading from the big presidential book of wisdom and just plain dumb. Rarely is the question asked, is our children learning? A shudder goes through his whole body as he thinks of how scary it was to testify in front of the 9/11 Commission, even with Cheney there. It was still dark and with spiders. I know how hard it is for you to put food on your family. We're fixing to go down to Galveston, and obviously are going to see a devastated part of this fantastic state. They, our enemies, never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. George W. Bush, with the big 43 and a blue circle on the stomach of his cowboy jammies, fixes his eyes on the ceiling at the thought of being there in Dealey Plaza that day, watching his dad and the others kill John F. Kennedy. That was the best day ever. They had red, white, and blue ice cream afterward. I promise you, I will listen to what has been said here, even though I wasn't here. One of the things important about history is to remember the true history. You know, one of the hardest parts of my job is to connect Iraq to the war on terror. I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully. Again, he stops, thinking about being on Air Force One after leaving Booker Elementary and talking to Cheney and the others about how beautifully it was all going. It was like how, when his head cheerleader, he was a cheerleader for his alma mater, Yale University, and also the head cheerleader in high school at Phillips Academy Andover. You planned a skit, and you didn't know how it was going to work out, and it worked out beautifully. He nods to himself, thinking of how those days prepared him perfectly for his days in the Oval Office. And Barbara Walters takes notes. Nobody said it was going to be easy, and nobody was right. When I need a little advice about Saddam Hussein, I listen to country music. I think we agree, the past is over. The aging president closes the big book reverently, nods, runs his hand over the cover, closes his eyes, and falls asleep. Barbara Walters raises a hand to ask him a question, and seeing her chance, quietly gets up and walks fast out of the library, putting her finger to her mouth to shush the old ladies behind the desk as the automatic doors open and shut. Shush, shush.
One life to live. That's all you've got. And then, at that time, the time. What thoughts will pass through your brain if there is time? If we could talk to the dead, what would they tell us? Go faster? Slow down. Give up? Don't ever give up. sure would be nice to know, wouldn't it? Well, we've got an app for that. Talk to the dead, get answers from your smartphone. At that time, big time, what thoughts will pass through your brain if there is time? If we could talk to the dead, what would they tell you? Go faster, slow down. Give up, don't ever give up. Sure would be nice to know. But we've got an app for that. Talk to the dead. Get answers for your smartphone. For $19.95 monthly sign-up fee required in some states may cause liver damage. Stop using if you see Bizarro, Bugs Bunny, and or dots of jiggly lines before your eyes. If you experience hypertosis, hopatosis, halitosis, or chronic disease, music ringing in your ears, consult your doctor. Not yet available in Iowa. And now for another episode of On the Road Again. Luke. The trucker says goodbye to wife and family, headed from a town in Idaho to upstate New York. He's hauling Count Chocula, dark chocolate, so dark it's almost maroon, wouldn't you say? How many cases? How many boxes? How many ounces per box? He knows more than others know. Way more. Just stop. Listen to country music. Talk radio. Late night, all night talk radio. Deep in the night. The dark. So dark. It's almost maroon. Boston. Wellstone. OKC. Sandy Hook. Alien. Ghost. 9/11. Bigfoot. It's all there on late night talk radio. Luke calls in, but then doesn't know what he should say, so he just hangs on. He wants to talk, but shouldn't? He knows what others don't know. He knows more than others know. Why? How? Who is he? He's just a guy on the road in the middle of the night. Who knows?
Our second guest of the night is Sherwood Ross, and Chuck, we'll just get right to that. Sherwood Ross is somebody who's been with us since the beginning, and actually it was February 2011 that we started the show, and Chuck is getting Sherwood Ross on the line right about now.
Hello?
Sherwood.
Well, hello, Sherwood. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and I'd like to wish you a happy new year, and you're on the air.
And the same to you.
Well, thank you. Go ahead.
Do you want to put these questions to me?
Yes. For the listeners, we are recreating an interview that Sherwood did for someone named Karosh Ziabari in Iran.
Try a reporter for the Tehran Times,
okay.
By the name, with an unpronounceable name.
I
you think
like
he was... Karosh Ziabari, and you think with a name like that he's Russian, but he's not. Anyway, he asked me if why 13% of all the religious-based hate crimes in America are against Muslims, when Muslims only make up 1% of the population.
Hmm.
And he wondered why this is taking place when President Obama had promised to revitalize Muslim American relations. And, you know, I think it's practically inevitable that some of the thoughtless multitude at the bottom of the education pyramid are going to embrace the aggression advocated by the super patriots
You know, and this is rampant right now in the United States. Go to a ball game, they're playing the Star Spangled Banner. Wherever you go, whatever you do, you're always reminded of the American government, you know. It didn't used to be this way back in the 30s and 40s when Americans had some confidence that their government was doing the right thing. But anyway, as for President Obama's promises to do the right thing in the Middle East, I mean, they're worthless. Day after day, he's authorizing drone strikes against suspects in Muslim nations. I forget how many it is, 7 nations, 8 nations. There have even been drone strikes in the Philippines, which has a large Muslim population. No courts, no judges. You know, and these attacks have claimed the lives of thousands of innocent civilians. And that kind of conduct is an affront to the very principles of justice. Another thing, one of my friends refers to him as President Obama. I don't think that's anything to joke about, though. Another thing he's done is expanded the role of the CIA, an agency that Mr. Obama once worked for. And what is the CIA? You know, it's bigger than the Chicago mob. It's bigger than Al Capone. It's the foremost criminal organization in the world, the biggest, the largest, the best funded. I mean, what crime incorporated ever got $25 billion a year? And it's famous for its history of initiating calamities and resorting to terrorism. So you get some idea of the true character of the president by the friends with which he associates with.
Well, heard about the release of the anti-Islam movie Innocence of Muslims, directed by an Israeli-American man called Sam Basile, and the subsequent republication of offensive cartoons of Prophet Muhammad in the French Charlie Hebdo magazine. Who's behind these anti-Islam plots? Why have the Muslims and their sanctities become the target of Western propaganda machine attacks?
Well, you know, there doesn't need to be anyone or any organization behind the plots being hatched. They can truly be the work of isolated dunces who are not related in any way to the U.S. government or the CIA. Pardon me, but the best strategy for dealing with these cultural affronts to the Muslim faith is to ignore them. The demonstrations, the rioting and reaction to the recent Danish cartoon, you know, they only achieve the cravings of their creators for publicity. Muslim and Arab peoples have got to consider the source and ignore them utterly. Excuse me. By the same token, all the denunciations of Salman Rushdie's satanic verses by the Iranians, all that did was to sell more copies. It's always best to put your passions aside in these matters and not resort to threats of force.
Do you consider the Israeli war threats against Iran a continuation of President Bush's war on terror initiative? Can we interpret Tel Aviv's hawkish rhetoric on Iran as part of a larger plan to demonize and isolate the Muslim nations which resist the American imperialism? Does the Israeli regime have the capability or legitimacy to launch an attack on Iran?
Well, you're asking three questions, and I can't answer the first two. As for the last, I don't think Israel is bound to take its duty-bound as a UN member to take its complaint to the United Nations rather than to threaten Iran, much less attack it. No UN member can threaten another UN member. It's in the charter. And no UN member can attack another member. That's in the charter, too. What you've got is a lot of hypocrisy here. Israel reportedly has 200, some say 300 nuclear weapons, and it refuses to allow UN inspection. Yet it threatens Iran with war, and the UN says, it's the UN that says that Iran doesn't have even one nuclear weapon. So, you know, who's at fault here? It's a wonder why the U.S. has taken...
I'm sorry, Sherwood, but our time's run out anyway.
Well, that's quick. 15 minutes is shrinking every month.
Peace,
my brothers, and a happy new year, brothers
happy
and sisters.
Happy New Year to you, Sherwood. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Chuck.
To a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, it's Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic ride.
I have worked with CIA, NSA, Templars, and Bilderbergers. Now I work for you. My show will disclose secrets, science, and esoteric knowledge. Join me, Stephen D. Kelly, for 2 hours every Thursday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Time on freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio, Studio A. You can also listen to previous shows by going to youtube.com/freerevolutionradio.
There is no denying the world is awakening. We see it in the global uprisings and demonstrations of the people around the planet and the new way of thinking and living that is arising naturally within each one of us and our communities. I have been a major player in this global shift and movement for over 20 years and have helped tens of thousands of people around the world change their lives and find their voice in order to help create the paradigm change we so desperately need. Join me here at Revolution Radio on the Just Bernard Show every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time for 2 hours of powerful interviews and discussions with some of the most influential visionaries of consciousness, alternative media, and suppressed knowledge. We promise to reveal the real matrix and empower your human experience.
Mondays, 8 Eastern Time on Revolution Radio for Journeys with JP. With a variety of guests, each giving their perspective on their journey into the now. Join me and my guests, Mondays, 8 p.m. Eastern on Revolution Radio Studio B.
Fries, I got an empty box.
Would you like another?
Extra big ass fries.
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
your
purchase.
No, no.
Well, I'm sorry you have
come on.
Trouble.
I'm sorry
you have
starving.
Trouble.
and Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence and self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So, if seed prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need to ask humans to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and offspring living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What are we doing right? That goes in eternity.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now from Port Orange, Florida, with stops at Information Clearinghouse, Nation of Change, Truth House, World News Trust, Intrepid Reports, Dissident Voice, and many others. Phil Ferruggio presents, It's the Empire, Stupid!
Happy New Year, Working Stiffs. This is my newest appropriate for New Year's. A New Year's resolution, out of the box. We have always been boxed in. Our rents and mortgages higher than they should be, our too high cable and power bills, car payments, really a myriad of debts that box us into this empire. You see, it has all been orchestrated by not even the so-called 1%. No, it becomes much more finer than that, with perhaps one-tenth of the 1% that rules us all. As with the announcer on the 1960s sci-fi show, The Outer Limits, we are controlling transmission. So the very rich and powerful own our political system, our corporate world, our media, and even, sadly, our revisionist history. They created the phony left versus right paradigm, morphing it into this red state versus blue state hogwash, or Republican versus Democrat claptrap. They needed a compliant media to go along, so they only give credence, air and print time, to journalists and pundits who play ball with the empire. Big oil and big gas rifle us with propaganda that we need higher prices to sustain our economy. They sell us the lie that fracking is safe. Big Pharma owns most of the mainstream medical profession, so it is easy to push drugs into our mouths, even more natural than the homeopathic treatments can be. The food we eat is not properly regulated by our government because, well, profit trumps public health and safety. In addition to forbidding cigarette smoking in restaurants, maybe they should outlaw deep frying and saturated fats. You know they won't, just like the empire will never voluntarily withdraw from our military presence worldwide, along with the phony so-called wars we engage in. Not good for business. So, we are all, whether we like it or not, boxed in. There is a way out if you dare to attempt it. No, not through violent revolution at all. Rather, the first step is through rejection, or as Gandhi preached, peaceful non-cooperation. Stop voting for anyone who runs under the banner of the two-party system, period. Stop watching all the crap thrown our way on the mainstream and even alternative media. Begin to slowly, because it does take time, pick and choose away from the corporations that really suck. Open bank accounts with credit unions and not major banks. Shop at farmers markets and the local stores, or at least local chains, and not just at Walmart and the big box stores. Not easy to do, but it can be done. And most of all, get out with other kindred spirits and stand in regular peaceful protest against what Eisenhower himself labeled a military-industrial complex, which is bankrupting us all fiscally and spiritually. So forget about the labels of left versus right. Seek out common ground with others who reject the current political system, focusing on pulling back this empire before it closes up that box even further. Happy New Year, Working Stiffs.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Now for your local Earth news. Hello, everyone. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Polachek with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard. Shakir Hamoudi, a Columbia business owner imprisoned for sending money to his family in Iraq in violation of U.S. sanctions, was released Tuesday from the United States Penitentiary at Leavenworth, Kansas, to serve the remainder of his sentence in a halfway house and on home arrest. Hamoudi, a nuclear scientist once employed by the University of Missouri and owner of World Harvest Foods, was sentenced in 2012 to 3 years in federal prison for sending more than $200,000 to family, friends, and charities from 1991 to 2003. Investigators found no evidence he was aiding the Iraqi government of Saddam Hussein to his contributions, which he told the court were to provide for basic needs of family members.
My uncle was a surgeon and made $2 a month and could not even buy a box of eggs, said Awais Abdul Kaki, a Moody son, in an interview Friday. They were suffering and starving. Hamoudi, 62, is at Reality House in Columbia and has a final release date of April 7, 2015. Federal release rules require him to seek work until his final release, but he's not allowed to work at his business, Abdul Kaki said. Since his father's imprisonment, Abdul Kaki has managed the business while pursuing medical studies at the University of Missouri. Prior to his sentencing, friends and supporters urged that Hamoudi be put on probation. Since his incarceration, petitions seeking a commutation have been presented to the U.S. Department of Justice in the White House, with no result. We're very thankful for the community of Columbia, Abdul Kaki wrote. They've stood with our family through this whole process. Hamoudi's troubles began in 2006 when his home was searched as part of a federal investigation of Life for Relief and Development, a Michigan-based Islamic charity that employed Hamoudi as his speaker to aid fundraising efforts. He pleaded guilty to federal charges in December 2009. It is an outrageous travesty to think that what this guy did deserves incarceration, Columbia attorney Craig Van Matt, who has represented Hamoudi's business interests and helped organize the petition effort. Support for Hamoudi has not been limited to his friends in central Missouri. Chinese artist A Weiwei, imprisoned by his government for 81 days in 2011, included Hamoudi twice in an exhibition on display at the historic Alcatraz prison in San Francisco Bay. His image appears in Trace, a segment that features 176 Lego portraits of figures that include American Martin Luther King Jr., Edward Snowden, and Chelsea Manning, as well as Nelson Mandela and other past and present and prisoners from around the world. He's a classic good man, Ben Matrudai. He is compassionate. He's intelligent. He is caring. He's a leader of the Muslim community, and he is charitable to the extreme. He's an adherent to the best aspects of the Muslim religion, and he just doesn't deserve it. Many of the family members of Moody tried to help live in Anbar province of Iraq, the site of renewed fighting in the past year between ISIS and the pro-U.S. government in Baghdad. It's a very troubled situation, Abdul Qafi said. It goes from one military or militia group to another. We don't know what will happen. Hamoudi is closer to home and family members will be able to visit more, but they're waiting for his release to celebrate. He's in a halfway house now. That's what it is.
That's all, folks. That's the news, and we are out of here. Good night and good luck. And so it goes. Stay classy, Tallahassee. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. At the end of the day, have a good day. Be always awesome. Bring something to the table, and always remember to tip your congressman. Next guest of the evening is Mickey Z. Mickey Z. Mickey Zezima is a vegan. Was born and raised Queens. Has appeared in a book with Noam Chomsky. In a martial arts film with Billy Blanks, with only a high school diploma, he has authored 12 books and has spoken and lectured in venues ranging from MIT to ABC No Real, from Yale University to Occupy Free University. Howard Zinn called him provocative and bold. Michael Zezima adopted the name Mickey Z after working at a gym in New York City where a friend called him Mickey. He liked the sound of it and used it as his pen name.
Well, on this first day of a new year, let me wish you a very happy new year, Mickey Z from Astoria, New York City.
Hey, happy new year, Chuck. Great to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So what's going on up in the city today?
Well, it's kind of the same thing. A variation of the same theme that's been going on. The primary topic up here has been related to the police brutality, police killings, racism, and the movement that is continuing to grow called Black Lives Matter. It's not even close to going away. It's actually growing and expanding. And I was at an event in New York City this week, which was called Dancing for Justice, and it was sort of performance art downtown near the courthouses, and it's pretty exciting to see this movement just continue to grow and bring in more people, and despite the fact that the weather's starting to get very winter-like here, it's not slowing people down, so it's exciting.
Well, that's very good to hear. I think it's pretty much a nationwide phenomenon, but I hope it go away.
Yeah, I mean, I would guess, I mean, obviously the concept of law enforcement officials or law enforcement vigilantes taking the lives of people of color is far from new in this country. It goes all the traces all the way back to slavery. But more recently, of course, the situation in Ferguson seems to have spawned this movement. And then in New York City, with the murder of Eric Garner, and then the no indictment of the cop who was filmed choking him to death. And then the latest development, which really nobody could have seen coming, was that somebody shot and killed two police officers here in New York, someone that was not a protester, not affiliated with the movement at all, but made some reference online about, loosely connecting it. And so it's become a much bigger discussion up here, and I'm curious to see where it plays out, because the NYPD is engaged right now in a very unofficial work slowdown, they call it. But the people of New York are probably loving it, because now they're not practicing what's called broken windows, this policy of policing, jaywalking, and giving out tickets for minor infractions. And so New Yorkers are actually able to enjoy their life a lot more thanks to this NYPD slowdown.
That's a rather amusing result.
Yeah, to say the least.
I read about the police officers are blaming the mayor and turned their back on him or something? What's up with that?
Yeah, it's continuing to grow. Shortly after the two cops were murdered, the mayor, de Blasio, went to what's called One Police Plaza, the main headquarters, and when he walked in, a bunch of cops stood up and turned their back on him. And then the same thing happened when he went to give the eulogy at one of the slain cops' funeral. They stood up and turned their back. And then most recently, a bunch of new cops graduated from the academy. And the tradition in New York City is they have this big ceremony in Madison Square Garden, and the mayor, whoever the mayor is, comes and gives a talk. But the new cops, the cadets, did the same thing and were taunting him. And they're sort of following the lead of this long-time tradition of the Trauma's Benevolent Association, the PBA, which is currently run by a guy named Richard Lynch, who basically it's a very, very militant group that is big. They really know how to play the media. They know how to play the tabloids in New York. And they're trying to make it look like de Blasio and the protesters are to blame for the cops who were killed, that they created this climate, that this could happen, and they literally used the language that de Blasio has blood on his hands. And de Blasio did win on a far more progressive platform than his predecessors, but since he's been in office, for the most part, he's been indistinguishable from his predecessors. I mean, that's pretty standard politics. You know, they say one thing and then get elected and go along with the program. But it's easy to demonize him because he has that rhetoric and because he's married to an African-American woman and has said publicly that his son, who is dark-skinned, has a better chance of being killed by a cop than a white boy. And so he said a couple of things that aren't typical for New York City politicians, so it's made him an easy target of blame for this situation.
It just doesn't make sense to me that saying things like that about a black being more likely to be a victim of a police shooting, that doesn't connect to me with the police themselves being shot or something else.
It's a system. It's the entire culture of the NYPD, and I could speak more directly about the local cops here, is such that we call it this gang in blue. They kind of run the city like almost like a mafia family, and they follow the same protocols. And part of it is these concepts of quotas. They're filling prisons, which is another huge business. And so the targeting of people of color never really ended after slavery. And the numbers back that up. The percentage of African Americans in this country is less than 13%. And then when you look at how many African Americans, relatively speaking, are in prison or on death row, I think it's 41% of death row. So it's clear. I mean, you can only make two assumptions based on these statistics, that A, blacks are more likely to commit crimes, or B, that the system is inherently racist. So the cops on the streets are the enforcers. They're the ones that enforce a system that is and has always been inherently white supremacist. So what's interesting is that this type of conversation is actually being had now. And in New York City, you see a lot of long-time white activists openly and willingly taking a back seat as part of this Black Lives Matter movement, because the time is long past for a white person to step up and represent anything but themselves. I mean, so I think it's what's fascinating to me is the depth of the conversation. We're seeing concepts like white supremacy being discussed in the New York Times, which I certainly couldn't have seen coming a year ago. So I'm curious to see where this goes in 2015, because it has, I can compare the energy on the ground to what it was like in the early days of Occupy Wall Street, only it's better because it's not centered in one park and it's not primarily white and middle class. So it feels like this movement nationally and then to some degree internationally, can have some legs, and we'll see where it goes in the next year.
Well, it certainly is going to be interesting to see how it plays out all over the world, and especially in your neck of the woods, because New York tends to kind of lead the nation in many ways. What happens there takes on it's a big stage. It takes on more importance.
I agree. I mean, we can't forget that it grew out of Ferguson, Missouri, which as of probably late July 2014, 99.9% of Americans didn't even know there was a Ferguson, Missouri. And unfortunately, they're on the map now for the murder of Michael Brown. But the activists in the community there deserve a big bulk of the credit for the endurance and the commitment they've put into creating this national network. But as you say, when things pick up in a big city like New York, in particular New York, it's going to get way more media attention, and the size of the NYPD alone demands more attention. So I'm really happy to see that New York has happily picked up taken the torch from Ferguson and begun to do its part.
Well, so what's your New Year's Day? What do you do on New Year's Day? Go to the parade or anything?
I do something different all the time. But tomorrow, I mean, for January 1st, I'm going to do something that is a New York City tradition that I've never witnessed. I'm not actually partaking of. But every year, a group of people that call themselves the Polar Bears go out to Coney Island Beach, strip down to a bathing suit, and swim in this sub-zero water. And a couple of friends of mine that are photographers, and I like to do photography myself, invited me to come out to Coney Island Beach and photograph it and hang out. And my whole life, I was aware this happened, but typically you go out on New Year's Eve, whatever, and you don't necessarily get up and go to the beach the next day. So I'm trying to make the commitment to be there and witness a New York City tradition for the first time.
Well, that sounds like fun. It sounds like fun to watch.
Yes.
It doesn't sound like any fun at all to do it.
Yes, I appreciate the clarification. To me, the fun will be in witnessing and documenting it, but better them than me than jumping into that ice-cold water. Wow.
No. Well, we've used up our allotted time once again, but I really appreciate you being on our show, and look forward to at the beginning of every month this year. And I'd like to once again wish you a happy new year.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure, really. I look forward to every month to be on the show. I thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to doing lots more in 2015 with you.
All right.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
See you next month. Thank you. Well, I always enjoy visiting with Mickey Z the first Thursday of every month. And thanks again, Mickey.
God.
Join me, Joe Kiernan, and Dr. J every Sunday from 10 p.m. Eastern to midnight for Researchers on a Mission Radio. We will be interviewing guests in ufology, experts on the paranormal, and stories from you, the listener. Every Sunday, 10 p.m. in Studio B. Join us for some amazing conversations and edge-of-your-seat true thrillers.
Right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Studio B, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday night. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Hello and welcome to Revolution Radio here at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported internet radio station in the world. So, I want to ask you, do you have a favorite host or several here at Revolution Radio? Don't have the time to catch every show when it's live? Well, you can get all the shows to your favorite host for the year 2014 on one data DVD, so you can play on your preferred device at any time. The cost is just $30 plus shipping. Now, remember, I'm just one guy, so allow up to 2 weeks or 10 business days for delivery. Also, the hosts themselves get half of the net proceeds. So not only are you supporting Revolution Radio, you're supporting your favorite host as well. So just go to our homepage and click the banner that says your favorite show. Just down. It's easy to find. Big old letters. Anyway, so thank you. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps. We are taking pre-orders for the 2014 and we'll start shipping after the first of the year. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, a word from the Target and Walmart New Year's Revolution Card Collection, the card designed with you in mind. Some sample selections from the Target and Walmart New Year's Revolution Card Collection.
The revolution is not an apple that falls when it is ripe. You have to make it fall.
Che Guevara.
You can kill a revolutionary, but you can never kill the revolution.
Fred Hampton. When dictatorship is a fact, revolution becomes a right. Victor Hugo.
We have two American flags always, one for the rich and one for the poor. When the rich fly it, means that things are under control. When the poor fly it, means danger, revolution, anarchy.
Henry Miller.
The Target and Walmart New Year's Revolution Card Collection. The card designed with you in mind. Now for another episode of the new reality show, Debt Slaves, The Real Lives of People. What they do to live in the U.S., own homes, cars, drive fast, always on the move, smoke, drink, world events go past in a blur. They do not slow down, because then they would be able to see. They owe money. That gives their lives a purpose that those around them can understand and agree with. Pay for the car, the house, the clothes, the phone, the TV, and then pay for them again. Keep moving like a fish to live, to breathe. Don't stop. Can't stop. Always keep moving. Debt Slave, sponsored by Raymond Noodles, Chili, Lime shrimp, beef, and chicken. And also by MedPro, portable urinal.
And now, a message in a Boone Farm bottle, some notes we have been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners, by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. From B.O. Plenty in downtown D.C., we hear, almost all wars begin with false flag operations. The coming conflicts in North Korea and Russia are no exception. Mass public hysteria is being manufactured to justify aggression against Moscow and Pyongyang in retaliation for events, for acts attributed to the North Korean and Russian governments, but orchestrated and carried out by the CIA and the Pentagon. The false flagging of North Korea, CIA weaponizes Hollywood, the campaign of aggression against North Korea, from the hacking of Sony and the crescendo of noise over the film The Interview, bears all the markings of a CIA false flag operation. The hacking and alleged threats to moviegoers has been blamed entirely on North Korea without a shred of credible evidence beyond unsubstantiated accusations by the FBI. Pyongyang's responsibility has not been proven, but it has already been officially endorsed and publicly embraced as fact. The idea of America under attack by North Korea is a lie. The actual individuals of the mysterious group responsible for the hacking remain conveniently unidentified. A multitude of possibilities, Sony insiders, hackers for hire, generic internet vandalism have not been explored in earnest. The more plausible involvement of U.S. spying agencies, the CIA, the NSA, etc., their overwhelming technological capability and their peerless hacking and surveillance powers remain studiously ignored. Who benefits? It is illogical for Pyongyang to have done it, isolated and impoverished North Korea, which has wanted improved relations with the U.S. for years to no avail, gains nothing by cyber attacking the U.S. with its relatively weak capabilities and face the certainty of overwhelming cyber and military response. On the other hand, Washington benefits greatly from any action that leads to regime change in North Korea. But discussion about Pyongyang's involvement or lack of risks missing the larger point. This project, from the creation of The Interview to the well-orchestrated international incident, has been guided by the CIA, the Pentagon, and the State Department from the start. It is propaganda. It is a weapon of psychological warfare. It is an especially perverted example of military intelligence manipulation of popular culture for the purpose of war. There is nothing funny about any of it. The interview was made with the direct and open involvement of CIA and RAND Corporation operatives for the express purpose of destabilizing North Korea. Starring co-director Seth Rogen has admitted that he worked directly with people who worked in the government as consultants who I'm convinced are in the CIA. Originally conceived to be a plot taking place in an unnamed country, Sony Pictures co-chairman Michael Lind, who also sits on the board of the RAND Corporation, encouraged the filmmakers to make the movie overtly about murdering Kim Jong-un. Bruce Bennett, the RAND Corporation's North Korean specialist, also had an active role, expressing enthusiasm that the film would assist regime change and spark South Korean action against Pyongyang. Other government figures from the State Department, even operatives connected to Hillary Clinton, read the script. The infantile, imbecilic, tasteless, reckless idiots involved with the interview, including the tasteless Rogan and co-director Evan Goldberg, worked with these military intelligence thugs for months, hung out with them. They do not seem to have had any problem with being the political whores for these Langley death merchants. In fact, they had fun doing it. They seem not to give a damn, or even half a damn, that the CIA and the Pentagon have used them and co-opted the film for an agenda far bigger than the stupid movie itself. All they seem to care about was that they are getting publicity and more publicity and got to make a stupid movie. Idiots. The CIA has now succeeded in setting off a wave of anti-North Korea war hysteria across America. Witness the ignorant squeals and cries from ignorant Americans about how we can't let North Korea blackmail us. We can't let Kim take away our free speech. Listen to the ridiculous debate over whether Sony has the courage to release the film to stand up to the evil North Koreans who would blackmail America and violate the rights of idiot filmgoers who now see it as a patriotic duty to see the film. These mental midgets, their worldviews shaped by the CIA culture ministry with its endorsed pro-war entertainment, violent video games, and gung-ho shoot-em-ups, are hopelessly brain-curdled, irretrievably lost. nihilistic and soulless, as well as stupid, most Americans have no problem seeing Kim Jong-un killed on screen or in reality. This slice of ugly America is the CIA's finest post-9/11 army. Violent, hate-filled, easily manipulated, eager to obey sheeple who march to whatever drumbeat they set. And then there are the truly dumb fools who are oblivious to most of reality, who say, hey, lighten up, it's only a comedy and it's only a movie. Naive, entitled, exceptionalist Americans think the business of the war, the murderous agenda they and their movie are helping the CIA carry out, is all just a game. The CIA's business is death, and that there are actual assassination plans in the files of the CIA targeting heads of state. Kim Jong-un is undoubtedly on a real assassination list. This is not funny either. The real act of war, the provocative, hostile, diplomatic stance of the Obama administration speaks for itself. Washington wanted to spark an international incident. It wants regime change, and Pyongyang does not care what North Korea or China think. It does not care anything North Korea will do about it. And, well, now we are hearing. And, well, now we are hearing from William Pepper, attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, now attempting to be released from prison for the 1968 murder of Robert Kennedy on grounds that Sirhan was programmed to be a patsy and a decoy for the real killers in the Ambassador Hotel pantry that hot summer night.
The American people have been called by numbers of people all over the world as being the most dumbed-down population in Western civilization. Certainly, they're probably among the least politically and other ways sophisticated people in Western culture. That's no accident. And it's no testimony to the lack of intelligence and potential of the citizens of this republic. It's a testimony to the control of thinking and the flow of information that people are allowed to have. The effects of the media and the thought control that has been developed in this country is extraordinary, and it's very difficult to overcome. One wonders how long it's going to take for the uprising to occur. I actually think we may be reaching a point where we're entering a pre-revolutionary stage.
A message in a Boone's Farm bottle, some notes that I've been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegram. Well, it's been another long week in Duluth, Minnesota, my hometown at the end of the empire. If it's happening, it's happening in Duluth. Duluth is a microbrewery of what is going on everywhere, where the people fight to have some sort of say and leave it to the outlaws to come up with something. Leave it to the guys in the jails and carrying skateboards, leaning up against the light pole at 2 in the morning to come up with something. It's the home of Piker McNugget, Carol Kopecky, Frosty Pine, Benny Bloodfeather, some 23 toy women's, Diamond Griffin, and Penny Jones. Families from Minneapolis and St. Paul and St. Peter and Mankato and Des Moines thundering up Interstate 35 hit full throttle on Friday afternoon, accelerating past Hinckley and Sandstone, past Pine City, Barnum, Cloquet, to get away, to let their hair down, to get bugs and branches in their hair. You turn your phone to vibrate or heave it into the ditch, grenade style. Change your radio from WCCO to the Moose. Up and up and around and over the hill, and there it is, the view. Lake Superior, the big lake. And there's the lift bridge in Morgan Park and New Page paper plant. The bridges to Superior, Wisconsin, the bay, the big boats. Turn right to Canal Park for the tourists. Turn left uphill for those who have already decided to stay. Duluth is big burritos and apricot wheat beer and a parade to celebrate cold weather. Duluth can be murder. It's the big lake, big woods, big tradition, big old buildings, like an old sailor headed back to his boat at 4 in the morning, stumbling, never falling. It's the song and the secrets of the North Woods. It's schools on top of bars, on top of boat shops, and it's adventure. And it's being able to be yourself, but Duluth can be murder. It's the trains, the taconite, guns, tattoos, bowling, brawls, Bigfoot, and ball games. It's laser tag. It's the bomb. It's the gold.
Penny Jones stretched his neck. He stood on the curb watching her. He leaned this way and that. He stood on tiptoes, but his eyes never left her as she inched along, passed down the upraised hand, the giant mosh pit that was the whole street, gliding, floating along on the demands and dreams of everyone. She glided down the center of the avenue, not as one might find a dignitary in a long, open, black limousine. For Mayor Mary Pine, they came up with this fancy flip. She perched on her throne chair way up there, like you might see a woman her age in a homecoming parade. Way, way up there. The height determined by the observer's perspective. For a while they cheered in the streets, they forgot about the looming weather bomb, about not having food or a job. For a moment, they did not wish time away, wait to be through with this or that menial, boring task and get on with what they were really meant to do. She sat on her metal folding chair with a snowy forest around her, a paper wolf, a bear, and in front of her a big miniature Duluth diorama with lake and lift bridge and lighthouse. It was not possible, but Mary Pine had happened, thought Penny Jones. She had been born and grew up and played and gone to East High School and UMD. She was a senior now, with a tutor in her office, they said on the news. Her deep black hair ran in a braided plait to the small of her back, and today had a frosting of purple. She wore the famous red tennis shoes like magic slippers, a purple and gold Bulldogs t-shirt, her well-known full-color spotted owl tattoo on her arm, one diamond stud and one not. She sat so straight when she sat, but she could not sit still, always popping up the wave point to go to the very edge of the float to grab someone's hand. But when she sat, she perched like royalty, born to the job, smiling, waving with her left hand, resting her right hand on her torn blue jean knee with the phone in its famous red safety case. Penny growled, and a man standing close turned to stare. The red safety case. Oh, brother. He saw the torn blue jeans, and the bones in his jaw rippled like a shark just below the surface. She needed to die. She needed killing. Anyway, somewhere. Clean, faster, long, drawn out, and dirty. Now there she went again, up and down, like a doe sensing the crosshairs, bouncing all around the city meadow. There she goes again, thought Penny, a TD jack-in-the-box, waving with both hands, kicking her legs in some karate move, giving air high fives, fist bumps, reaching, wanting to escape the float to get down and hug everyone. A child dressed as a park ranger took the new mayor's hand and directed her back to her chair. Mary Pine smiled and shook the little ranger's hand and continued waving way up to the top floors of the buildings and down to the street. She was almost up to where Penny Jones stood on the corner of Lake and Superior, where the parade would round the bend, head up and over the interstate, down to Canal Park and the waterfront, where the VIPs would board for the Mayor's Lake Tour Ball, that this year was probably a marijuana party on beanbags, thought Penny. At the corner, on the very edge of the curb, a man stood within a group of wheelchairs. He held a broom. The wheelchair man next to him seemed to be speaking into a rolled newspaper. Across the street in People's Plaza, next to the acoustic deal, a man wearing a sailor's rain hat that sold Duluth Heart to Mary Pine t-shirts. Faces appeared in the windows of the Twin Towers, the subsidized apartment at the end of the period. Mary Pine, the new mayor, was all those things that children are. Penny Jones could see that, believing that things are possible and that they will be in on the doing, and then that goes away. But with her, it did not go away. It was happening right now. Penny Jones saw her this moment. Brushing the ivory handle of the knife, he raised up one hand and waved. The other hand gripped a gun at his side. Which would it be? He'd sweated all night, knife or gun. Penny Jones pulled the black patch from his pocket, slipped it over his left eye. Gun or knife? He tried to look up, around, down, not right. He yanked the patch and shoved it back in his pocket. Bullet? Blade. Cut? Stab or pierce, puncture through the head, the chest, the guts, the heart. Demolish, denude, declaim, decry, destroy. Robert Lund, the newest Minnesota Congressional Medal of Honor winner, excused himself. He'd spent the morning sitting in McDonald's having coffee, talking with the old vets. Their walkers blocking the aisle, their powered wheelchairs, Harleys, and Oldsmobiles parked on the sidewalk and in the lot. At UMD, many blocks away, a geology professor walked into her classroom and told the one student that she did not have to stay for class. The professor's brother, also an instructor, brought in a portable radio. They tuned it to the parade coverage. Tiny blonde woman in a white minister's uniform stood on the very edge of the curb, holding a sign way up over her head that said, "Free the trapped miner." She spotted a bicycle chained to a parking meter and climbed up the balance, one foot on the frame and one on the seat, holding up her sign. The trapped miners reached for the radio, being lowered on a rope from an Indian man and a helper lying on their stomachs on the turf. The miners high-fived and jumped around when they discovered they could get the parade. At Camp Ripley, a group gathered in the small auditorium to watch the live coverage of the news. Rivulets of students flowed downward from Central High School toward the parade. In the sauna at a health club and the hospital at the far end of Superior Street, someone had smuggled a radio. Two-thirds of White Pine and the Comedian sat at the bar at the cabaret, eating peanuts, watching the television button. A first-year teacher gathered her students around with her arms to get them close enough to see. Two men in twin suits stood right by the curb. One held a surfboard, the other held a 1960s-style walkie-talkie inside. A young man in a ponytail and backward cap crawled on his hands and knees in the forest, turning around at a roar that came from town. An inmate at the Moose Lake Prison walked into the recreation room and took a seat to watch it on the portable black and white. At the immigrant detention center, the break room was filled with pop cans and scattered wrappers. The little set atop the microwave played to an empty room. Way up north of Two Harbor, two brothers made a game of throwing a knife into a tree. As the mayor's float approached the intersection, the man holding the surfboard held it up over his head with both hands and pumped it up and down. Out in the country, an old man new to the area sat on his front porch with his laptop trying to find his property on Google Earth. A man lathered in deep black hair on his head and arms rushed about his shop, throwing his hands into the air to try to get one of his daughters to say to watch the store for just 1 minute while he ran to the parade. the new mayor's sister walked with the deputy mayor fast to get around a girl in a wheelchair and her mother pushing, blocking the sidewalk, headed so carefully downhill toward the parade. For some reason, their police car ride had not arrived at the party headquarters in time for them to be in the parade. They split to go around the girl and her mother, came together and moved even faster. "Hey, hey, Mary, Mary!" Penny Jones shouted, his face red, the veins in his neck bulging, ready to explode. "We hate you, you communist, piece of shit, terrorist, insurgent!" She searched for the face of the voice, found him, put her head to her ear, and leaned over to wave. Mary Pine looked into Penny's eyes. In the big lake of bobbing faces, she spoke, didn't hear. He saw her lips move, but he was lost in a dream, trying to run underwater. He shook himself. He shot up from the river bottom, his mouth wide, gasping for breath. He heard that deep, young, intelligent voice speaking to him. He could see the three, now four, buds of Edelweiss in her blueberry black hair. "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children," he shouted, rising up on his tiptoes like an assassin ballerina. There, he'd gotten it all out. Now the people would know the truth. "Hi, thank you for coming. Thank you so much." Her eyes were green and big like a Disney character, her brows thick and dark. Just the whole face had that look of quality and breathing and calm assurance that sports announcers attributed to elite athletes who were able to slow the game down. Mary Pine saw everything, realized the entire play in the first scene, processed it all, and noticed individuals. She pushed off the stand and then went back down to a knee. She had a puzzled look, maybe a cramp in her calf. With volleyball captain determination, she pushed up. With volleyball captain determination, she pushed up.
And that's the news from Duluth, Minnesota, where all the police and soldiers are thugs. All the Democrats and journalists are cowards. And all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average.
And that's it for the first New American Dream radio show of 2015. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope that you'll be back each and every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. We really love doing this show for you, streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'd like to thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thanks to our guests, Phil Ferruzio, Sherwood Ross, Mickey Zezima, Holy Damodar. To get the archives of the show from February 2011, go to theshow.newamericandream.info. And as always, we wish to acknowledge the work of South Dakota stone artisan Borglum Borglumson as he works to make over Mount Rushmore, put the real face of American history up there in stone. Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan, Mark David Chapman, and James Earl Ray. Follow the ongoing project at looserock.com, rollingstones.com, and jackrubyridge.com. To help support the show, please purchase one of our Tom Jefferson Rolling Industry Handy Campfire Rotisseries for the Ovo and your family, or get one of our family-sized Obamaville. Good night, Mrs. Caldash. Good night, Todd Fever. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Emily Parker. Good night, Ben Wheeler. Good night, Crystal Campbell. Good night, Nancy Lanza. Good night, James Foley and Stephen Sotloff. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.